This is F1 Debrief, Vettel or Bust. Coming up this week, we discuss movies, safety cars and many engineers, plus conspiracy theories dating back to Vettel's Toro Rosso days.
This podcast is so late, I thought we weren't going to record one. Are you tired from the weekend, by any chance?
Well, it's only because the race was on at a silly time.
Yes.
I'm not happy when it's on early in the morning. I'm not happy when it's on late in the afternoon. I'm just never happy.
Right. Is there any time that would be perfect for you to watch a race?
Only if we had 30-hour days, I think.
Okay. I liked the timing of this Grand Prix. My body clock isn't messed up. However, we were pushed for time on Sunday, and therefore we're now recording it on a Monday, with the benefit of more information and hindsight.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for the Williams crew as Rubens took the race team out karting and then for dinner. From the eyewitness account, great fun was had by all except for mechanic Jez Cave, who's nursing some bruised ribs after being rammed in the karting event.
I can't believe Rubens invited Schumacher. That's so nice of him. Yeah,
that would be about right. But it does seem a bit silly to me to go karting before a race weekend.
It's tiring stuff, karting.
Yeah, well, last time you went, you couldn't move for a week.
Well, shush.
It's been a bad week for Karen Chanduk, who felt left out when those in the paddock were treated to a special screening of the new Ayrton Senna film. From Paddock Life on Autosport, almost all of those who have seen the film have loved it, and the producers and writers of the film mentioned some great stories about how they managed to cut down 100 hours of footage of Senna into just a 1 hour 50 film. One of the good anecdotes was that while sifting through the films with Formula One management, they were charged for the sandwiches they ate.
Bernie!
Doesn't that sound like Bernie?
That sounds right, yeah. Have a complimentary sandwich, £1.50.
Yeah.
It's on the house,
yeah.
Pay up.
They were really teasing poor Chanduk on Twitter, they weren't they?
Yes, I'll tell you what, though.
He said, it's his own fault, because he said, if one more person tells me how good that film is, so everyone on Twitter was like, you should really see that film, it's awesome.
He did bring that on himself.
Yeah.
In fairness, though, his mum did save the day.
Did she come to his rescue?
She, I believe she begged the director of the film to let Karen have a screening of the film as soon as possible, and he did agree to do that. So, well done, Karen's mum. She saved the day again.
It's been a good week for anyone who has ever fancied a Formula One race on the moon, because Renault and Total have come up with some kind of...
How many people could that possibly be?
I don't know. Bernie?
Because of the atmosphere?
Yeah.
Or the lack of?
Yeah. Renault and Total have come up with some kind of thing. They've...
Excellent.
They've launched this special website all about an imaginary F1 race and something to do with a boy called Charlie Sweetheart, who I'm assuming is fictional because otherwise NASA have been spending their money in weird ways.
Right.
The website is total-moon-race.com.
Okay.
Catchy. And that's it. That's all I know. I don't really understand what it's about. Something to do with the moon.
This thing, as you describe it, is actually a movie, but I'm not convinced by the idea because it's a 3D movie and 3D is one of the most overhyped technologies of all time and it's never going to work and I'm already over the whole 3D thing. But I do believe the film is set to run from December the 1st across the Christmas period.
Renault are making a movie.
It's, well, Total, I think. Total and Renault are making a kids 3D animation and I'm sure it'll be festive. And fantasy sort of stuff and
about
3D.
The moon.
We're not going to go and see it.
No.
But fun stuff.
They did announce some proper good news at the same time, though. A multi-year deal with Japan Rags, which is a ridiculous name for a company.
Catchy title.
Yeah, they're a men's clothing company. They make jeans.
From Japan, maybe?
I think so.
Japan Rags.
Yeah.
And what's the what's the news?
Well, they're going to get their name on the inside of the end plate.
Which is a prominent position on an F1 car, if ever there was one.
That's usually the place reserved for when they write all the team names really tiny.
Oh, as the big thank yous, yeah.
So I don't know how much they're paying for it, but probably not as much prominent sponsor. It's been a bad week for Eminem, who took to the stage for the Brazilian F1 Rocks concert, and the article on F1.com describes it as such. It saw thunder, lightning, wind and torrential rain, providing a dramatic backdrop to Eminem's first ever appearance in Latin America, battling with the elements, soaked to the skin and standing ankle deep in water on a waterlogged stage. The US star and his band gave a memorable performance in front of 25,000 adoring Brazilian fans.
How did he not get electrocuted?
Well, there is that, but also it says a memorable performance, and whenever it says that, that does not mean good.
Is that like saying he has a bubbly personality?
Yes.
My question is, and it's an important question I feel, where was Eminem on Sunday for the race? Because the whole point of F1 Rocks is it's a tie-in between musical artists and the sport, and so all the sports fans went to the concert, so why didn't Eminem come to the race. Otherwise, it's not F1 Rocks, it's M&M Rocks.
They usually do, because wasn't it Mariah Carey? She was meandering around the paddock.
Plenty of artists have done it before.
She?
I think Nerd was seen wandering around.
N-E-R-D.
I don't know if... Is it not Nerd?
No.
Is that wrong?
Bless you.
I read it as Nerd.
Yeah.
Oh dear, not down with the kids. The band called N-E-R-D. Is it a band? It's not a person, is it? Is it a man? I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm so...
Anyway, them.
So over my head. The things that you call Nerd were wandering around the paddock, but I don't know, were they supporting Eminem? Were they part of
Eminem? They
F1
were Rocks? There too, yeah, because Pharrell Williams was seen with Hamilton as BFF.
Right. I sort of know who he is.
He's part of NERD.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I have no idea who he is. The race. On to stuff that I do know about then.
Yes.
Cars and stuff.
Did you happen to peruse qualifying when a certain Williams car went a bit fast?
Did I ever?
Yeah.
What a stunning couple of qualifying laps.
I do believe you might have whooped and hollered.
I cheered and I clapped. That was a certainty. The highlight of my year, I would say. An unexpected pole position. Yeah. Very, very rare in Formula One.
Just because it was such a complete surprise.
It was.
None of the top five drivers, it wasn't a Renault, it was just a complete surprise.
And Williams didn't really show anything like the pace. I mean, they have shown in practice some speed that they then lose when it gets to qualifying and lose even more when they get to the race. There was no real hint that this was coming and no indication that it wouldn't be a Red Bull that was on pole. And to see Hülkenberg up there as early as he was a nice surprise, but we certainly expected him to tumble down the order as soon as the next set of cars passed.
Yeah.
Never happened. And not only did it not happen, he still had time and a lap in hand. Williams timed the laps to perfection. Nico drove to perfection. It was just an awesome display.
Yeah, because he put it on a provisional pole and we looked at each other and said, that would be so amazing.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
To show the bosses at Williams what he can do. But it's never going to happen. We've still got lots of laps to see. And then he improved on his own time again. And you said, oh, but that's it. That's all of it. Alonso will get the last lap across the line.
I didn't think he'd make the line.
And then he had another whole lap
he
in
did.
Hand.
He didn't need that incredible final lap either, because Alonso had no answer. Neither did either of the Red Bulls.
But I'll tell you what, the whole world was sitting there in shock.
Mm.
And then they cut back to the BBC and Eddie Jordan, he says, well, I don't know why anyone is surprised. Do you think that he predicted it?
We can't repeat
no.
what we said, but we both said it in unison. Yeah. We both thought the same thing.
It was funny.
It was very, very rude and to the point. And I think it probably sums up everybody's opinion.
Followed by the mute button.
Yes. That was a massive surprise to me. And I should think anybody else.
Except for Eddie. So the big question is, does this improve his chances of staying with Williams?
Well, I think it was Lee who pointed out in the comments, best rookie. It's completely blown that wide open. I mean, that must be Hogs. I can't see how anybody is going to top a surprise pole position in an underperforming car that really didn't deserve to be up there. So that for certain is got to be Hogs for the keeping. Will it make a difference that Williams is a tough, tough question?
I mean, it happened about the same time as the news came out that his potential replacement, Maldonado, is also going to test with Hispania.
Yeah, there's been a lot of movement. I mean, did we discuss on the last show that Frank has this problem? He has three good drivers and he needs all of them. Well, he needs the money from one, he needs the experience from the other, and he needs the potential from the third. And therefore, he's really got a bit of a juggling act to balance. You know, how much money does he need to develop a decent car in order to give Hulk the car performance that he needs, versus can he let the guy go, or you know, can he bounce him off to HRT for a year and then bring him back?
But there is starting to be a big tie-up between Williams and HRT, because they're going to supply them with gearboxes and stuff, aren't they?
Basically, it looks like the same deal that Force India have with McLaren, which is the rear end of the car, the drivetrain that connects the Cosworth to the rest of the car. I would assume the exhaust and the suspension. It's a technology tie-up, much like we have with other teams in the field. It's good for Williams. We've long said that they should have something like this because they've got the potential. They should be making money out of this, assuming, of course, that HRT have the money to pay for it.
Yeah, well, they did just announce a partnership with Spanish businessman Juan Villalonga. And I really just wanted to say the name out loud. But he used to be CEO of Telefonica.
Right, yeah.
And I think he's just there to be a face and bring on board lots of new Spanish sponsors.
Right.
Assuming Alonso hasn't got them all already.
He may well have, actually. I mean, certainly in Spain, he is the only person that they are interested in. I think that's been a certain amount of HRT's problems. But it's good to see that they've got, so they've found somebody who sees the potential and is willing to give it a go. So that's important.
Now, you mentioned that we didn't think Hulk would be able to keep his pole position when the other cars finished their laps, but he did. We weren't so sure that he would be able to keep his lead in the race. No. And he didn't.
Well, he almost lost it off the line.
Well, he didn't have a good formation lap.
What happened?
He just didn't go anywhere and everyone went past and then he had to catch it up again.
It was a bit of a panic when I have yet actually to get to the bottom of what happened, but we did see him streaming past six or seven cars to take his place at the front of the field at a couple of corners after everybody else got there.
Yeah.
So
I looked at the timing app and suddenly Vettel was leading.
Which was confusing.
I had a bit of a panic.
Mm. But he managed to make the start, but he didn't even get into the first corner in the lead.
No. The Red Bulls, they were quite speedy off the line.
Yes.
I think Vettel on the grid, he was saying it's our intention to get Hulk off the line, and if we don't, we'll get him elsewhere. But he didn't need to do that at all.
No. I mean, respect to Hulk, because he put in a great performance. I think there was a couple of errors, which one error let Webber through. But he did manage to hold up both of the McLarens enough to really... He almost stifled the fight, because once he'd held up Lewis, there was no challenge to be had. And then Lewis destroyed his tyres and could do nothing more once he had clear air. So Hulk was a thorn in the side of the championship battle. But yeah. Good on him. I think he did well.
He had some really impressive defensive driving moves.
Yes. Williams expected more going into the race on Sunday, I think, from his position than eighth. Was it eighth he finished?
Yeah, afterwards he did say he was happy, but then I guess he had to say that, really.
Yeah. I mean, as a weekend's go, great weekend, perfectly timed. It's very rare that a driver needs a brilliant weekend and delivers like he did.
Yeah.
But yeah, he didn't quite end up exactly where he hoped he would have.
I did think it was quite amusing when Hamilton was stuck behind him and he was on the radio saying, I have no grip. Like, I really have no grip at all. Mm. And the guy comes back and says, yeah, you really need to get past Nico now. Like, I would if I could.
Give me a chance.
But did Hamilton just basically wreck his tyres?
Ooh.
Every chance he got?
We have a jingle for this. Because we're doing this on a Monday, we have time for Ted News.
Yeah.
Ted's done his video diary.
He has.
He's got news for us.
He said that Hamilton basically wrecked his tyres at every opportunity.
Twice. He had two new sets of tyres and he wrecked them both.
And that's why he had no grip the whole time.
After the race, McLaren were investigating what went wrong and whether it was anything they had done or not. And it looks like Lewis was just aggressive too soon.
Well, I think you can also tell that slightly because Button came in surprisingly early, didn't he?
Yeah, he messed up. He messed up a lot of people's stops. And you could see that so many drivers had to make a second stop, which was unexpected. We haven't seen too many front-running cars make two stops this season. And the fact that Button jumped so soon and everybody had to react or felt they needed to react definitely came back to hurt them later on.
I still don't really understand why they suddenly felt they had to come in as well.
It's true. There is a theory.
Everyone has to stop at some point.
Yes, but this is a really short track. And therefore, if you lose track position, you're in trouble. And I think part of Hulk's problem, actually, the reason he ended up so far back is he lost track position and ended up behind a Renault that didn't stop. So it didn't work out. It doesn't always work out when you make these decisions. Thus far this season, it seems to be that when somebody makes a stop, you counter that as soon as you possibly can. And Jensen went so soon in this race that it hurt everybody else.
But he had those second tyres on for a lot longer, mm. whereas Hamilton couldn't make his work.
Hamilton had no grip on any set of tyres he had at all. For whatever reason, I don't know what that problem was, but definitely after the race, Ted said that McLaren, the team, were blaming Lewis.
It's always been that way, though, hasn't it? That he drives aggressively and wears his tyres out faster than anyone else.
But it's been okay this season until this race.
Yeah.
It was more significant, I guess, for whatever reason.
Good evening. Lucky here, as always. I thought I'd send you a voicemail. Just to recap on the race, quick review of what we thought. But it was okay. Congratulations to Red Bull, of course. You know, they've got such a good car. And, you know, they probably are the fastest team this year, although Ferrari are starting to obviously outdo Alonso. And it's a shame as well for Jensen Button that his championship's over. But he's had such a... I personally feel, I know I'm probably biased, but he's had a really good year for McLaren. He's kept with Lewis all year. He's, you know, he's done well as a champion, so yay. Yeah, it's not a good day to be a BioCattle pilot. It's never a good day to be a BioCattle pilot in Telargos, is it? Every single year. One day he will come in awesome position of like 7th, and that will be amazing. Yeah, it was alright, I suppose. It could have been worse. I say this every week, it could have been Bahrain, but it wasn't. And it was, you know, there was plenty of overtaking. It was alright. It's now we're going on to the joy that is the net circuit with hotel Abu Dhabi, sorry, and we'll see who's champion there. My prediction: I'm hoping Weber, but I'm thinking Alonso will, or maybe Vettel, which doesn't really help.
I don't think I've ever heard a less enthusiastic yay.
Well, Jensen didn't retain his championship. He didn't defend his championship, did he? And poor Lucky, he hasn't been well this week. So that's probably where the lack of enthusiasm comes from. One thing that Lucky did bring up, which we can then talk about a little bit more, we have more Ted news. He's on fire this week. You see what happens when we do a podcast on Monday?
Yeah.
More Ted news for you.
I'm concerned that you're going to want to do it on Monday.
Every week.
We could also play that other jingle, although I don't have any specific.
We will do that in a second. Hold that thought.
Okay.
Yes. But first, I really, really, really want to get this Jensen. Let me get the Jensen
all
back
right,
in.
Talk about Jensen.
More Ted news is that an excuse, I guess, for Jensen's performance this year is the fact that he's now on his fifth engineer.
His fifth race engineer.
And you
five
know,
Robs.
Exactly. The Rob and Massa thing is a great comparison, because obviously those two get on really well and the relationship is really important between the driver and his engineer, and Jensen Button has gone through five. One was unwell and God knows what happened to the other three, but now finally he's on his fifth.
Well, at the beginning of the year, people said he should have brought with him his race engineer from...
Yeah, Shove and Bonner should have come with Jensen to McLaren, yeah, to Woking, and that didn't happen, unfortunately, for whatever reason. And now they're working with Michael Schumacher.
Yeah, that's all working them. Well.
Everybody lost out there.
It does seem like, because there was news last week or the week before about Rosberg bringing his old engineer.
Indeed.
To Mercedes.
It's important.
So it seems like you should find someone that you get on with and sort of latch onto them,
yeah,
and bring them with you all the time. Have it in your contract,
yes,
that they should come with you.
It's
unless they don't like you
want to. I know that Jensen took a long time to get the working relationship between him and Chev working as well as it did. And that didn't, I mean, there were many, many difficult years at Honda, I believe. So once he's found somebody, you'd have thought he'd have stuck with them, and that definitely was a mistake. It's turned out that was true. Had he managed to bring them to Woking, this year could arguably have been somewhat better.
Yeah. I did like after the race though, because Button finished, it was about fifth, was it? But wherever it was
fifth.
Out. It put him out of the championship.
Out of contention.
But he did say, "For me, the race was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. Fighting through the field and the team making the right calls on pit stop strategy to finish just behind my teammate who started fourth is not so bad." Definitely was fifth then. It's a good way to lose the world championship.
That's a nice quote.
Which I think is a nice thing to say.
You want another jingle?
What's Claire tweeting now?
Haven't heard that one in a while. Did we have a good week of tweeting?
She just seemed to tweet a lot. Lots of pictures and good stuff. I mean, there was a lot to tweet about, obviously, with Nico on pole. I saw a picture of him on the grid with Bernie Ecclestone.
Yes.
And yeah, I don't have anything specific, but it was just more stuff from Claire, and I know you like her. So.
I think it makes a big difference when team representatives are at the race.
Yeah.
As indicated by Virgin Man.
Virgin Man.
We talked about him a couple of podcasts ago. Alex was doing the tweeting for him because he hadn't gone to a race. Wasn't there again this time.
No.
Was of no use at all to us.
It did show up when Degrassi retired and he said, well, we don't know what's wrong with him. And actually people did know.
Yeah, we knew, but he was in a pub in London. Therefore, he had less information than we did. So not much use. Thankfully, I do believe he'll be in Abu Dhabi this coming week. But it makes a difference when you have official tweeters who aren't at the race. And Claire hasn't been to everyone this year either, which is why there's been a lack of tweets from that direction. But I'm hoping for next year, every team has a dedicated Twitterer on site.
Do I need to do jingles for every team? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. What's Jeff tweeting today would work. Absolutely nothing, because he's miles away.
Hi, Side Podcast. Stephen Roy here. I'm just going to drop off a quick voicemail about the Brazilian Grand Prix. Great to see Hülkenberg finally delivering on his potential. Obviously, the sort of weather and conditions and the qualifying made a big contribution to him ending up on pole. But It shows what the guy can do when he's given a chance. It also, I thought his race highlighted why I don't like pit stops. There's a famous Gilles Villeneuve race in 1981 in Jarama in Spain, where he took the lead. His car wasn't as good as the cars behind him, but he kept the lead for the whole race because he kept all the cars behind him by driving a perfectly defensive line. Hülkenberg couldn't do anything but the first two or three cars that went past him, but he could have maintained a good position for the rest of the race. But unfortunately, nowadays we have to have pit stops, and as soon as he made a pit stop, he disappeared way down the order. The guy's drive deserved a better result. I thought it was a reasonably good race overall, although the safety car ruined it. They really have to find a way of dealing with minor incidents, because this was a car parked next to a barrier. There's no reason why they couldn't have put a crane on it from the other side of the barrier and lifted it out. They've got to deal with that, and they've also got to find a way of sorting out back markers in a queue of cars, because we had the potential there to have a restart with the top three or four guys in the championship all together. But instead of that, Vettel got a huge advantage because he was at the front, and then there was three or four cars between him and Webber, and then there were more cars further back to the others. I've got a feeling Red Bull have blown this big time, though. I think their idea of not applying team orders yesterday has probably cost Webber the driver's title, unless something really odd happens in Abu Dhabi. It'd be really unfortunate, though, of course, if he lost it by less than 7 points, when Alonso gained that many points by Ferrari applying team orders. I love Red Bull's principle that they will not apply team orders, they will do it absolutely by a sporting manner. That is how it should be. But you don't ever, in motor racing, give an opponent an unfair advantage. If an opponent is prepared to do something and is allowed to do it, then you have to go with the same level of commitment and say, okay, you want to play it that way? We'll play to your rules, we'll beat you, and then we'll go and complain about it, or we'll complain about it up front and do it. But to allow one team to apply team orders, and then when you're up against them, to say, okay, we'll let them have the championship by what effectively is cheating, that is just pointless. Obviously, the result in Abu Dhabi could turn around and make me completely wrong, but somehow I don't think so.
Such a great voicemail. So many points to pick up on there. Where do you want to start? What do you want to start with from that?
Let's start with pit stops.
Okay, hate them. Hate them. Now that they've got rid of refueling, they are pointless.
I was going to say that Stephen said because he has to come in for a pit stop, he lost that place. But that's not true, because he had to come in for a pointless pit stop.
Uh-huh. Yes. Because it's an arbitrary pit stop in order to highlight the fact that there is a tyre company helping Formula One, paying Formula One's bills. And
I mean, he still could have lost the place with the refueling pit stop, but at least there would be the extra strategy thing where he could make it back, maybe.
Yes, absolutely. And given the fact all we're doing is changing four tyres, and it happens in a blink of an eye, and there have been so many mistakes with tyres this year because it's now so rushed, it's more dangerous, and therefore you may as well get rid of pit stops entirely in Formula 1, because if you're not going to have refueling, there is no point coming into the pit lane at all, unless you have a mechanical problem. Next point.
Next up, the safety car.
Okay.
Yeah, I got completely lost.
Agree with Stephen on that one? What would you say? Well, first point was, they've got to find a way of reducing the need for a safety car in minor incidents. Would you agree with that? Was it a minor incident? Lietzi got out of the car and he walked away, right?
Yeah, I mean, the car was sort of sticking out a little bit, and it may or may not have been on the racing line. I'm not sure.
The crane did have to cross the track, which probably means there was a lack of cranes in the area.
Yeah.
Which is an organisation problem.
I mean, I didn't necessarily have a problem with the safety car coming out, but the backmarker thing confused me more than anything.
There used to be a solution.
They used to be allowed to go past and sort themselves out.
And that was scrapped because it was dangerous, because you had slow cars
some
weaving.
Didn't bother.
Yeah, they got confused where they should be, and nobody really understood it. But the main problem was cars were weaving, warming up their tyres, and then a car would pass them at speed beside them.
Yeah.
So that was an issue. I did see another argument, actually, I think in the comments, which was the guys at the front of the queue, they actually had to pass the backmarkers at some point, and then so it's fair that the guys behind then should also make the effort. However, they were passing them at racing speeds and with a clear gap, whereas when you've got a bunched up field, it's much harder to do so. Also, I think a lot of drivers were not paying attention to the blue flags. I know at one point I swore at Bruno Senna for holding up Vettel, then holding up Webber. And then, do you know what I mean? It just got worse and worse and worse.
But the thing is, because under the safety car, both McLaren drivers came in for a pit stop, didn't they?
Mm, and they didn't lose anything.
And, well, on the BBC, we were listening to Brundle for whatever reason, because Five Live, every time we went there, they were on football.
Yes.
We had our timings completely wrong for some reason.
Well, it's a bigger issue. Now we're doing the Fact by Fact Box. We need a constant stream of information. We don't have the spare capacity to change feeds, which is what we've been doing until now. Yeah. We'd flip between Five Live and BBC TV when football was mentioned. Because we can't do that now.
Yeah, we were stuck with Brundle and Ledyard. And, you know, it would be all right if at least one of them knew what they were talking about. But under these safety car conditions...
Both had a really bad day.
Yeah, Brundle was saying, they've come into the pit, so now they're going to be down in like 24th. This is a ridiculous decision. Mm. But they weren't. They were fourth because of all these backmarkers. Now, I didn't know that, but I would expect Brundle to know
that. Yeah, I can see the confusion because cars had been lapped and they were lapped down and they could make it back up. I don't know what the solution is because whatever you do, it becomes a problem. There is, I sort of support the argument that actually the cars need to be passed, but I just think maybe the drivers need to be more aware. I mean, was it Fernandez who said earlier this year, and I think he was backed by Branson, who said that blue flags should be banned?
Yeah.
Well, that would be ridiculous in this situation. Thank God they aren't, Mr. Fernandez. I love Tony Fernandez, but seriously, if you got rid of blue flags in this situation, it would have been carnage. So, I mean, if ever there was a case for retaining blue flags, this race showed that that's it. But again, behind a safety car, I don't know what you can do about it, but something needs to be done.
It does seem like every time they change the safety car rules, we're like, yay, they've changed them. Oh, it's not working.
It's never got any better. I mean, maybe it's not possible to get safety car rules right in racing. I don't know. But whatever they do, it never seems to be correct. There's always a flaw in the plan, however hard people try.
I mean, I think that the backmarkers going past the safety car and sorting themselves out made more sense in my head, but it does seem extra dangerous.
Mm, it also slows things down,
yeah,
which was
especially
the other issue.
If you're waiting for someone to go and they haven't gone.
Yeah, and then they have to do a whole tour of the circuit to get out of the way, and it delays things, and obviously delaying the racing isn't ideal either.
No,
so whatever you throw at it, it never seems to be a solution. Maybe somebody out there has a solution. How would you solve the safety car problem once and for all, other than not calling it? Which was weird in this race because they called the safety car. Camera cuts to the safety car. He's just
they're not even in it.
He's not ready. The medical car's up and going. Safety car's just sitting there. Very odd.
And the other thing that Stephen picked up on there was Red Bull and their lack of team orders. Now,
go on.
We should say that Red Bull won the Constructors' Championship this weekend.
Yay.
Well done.
Well done to them. First time. Fantastic.
Only taken a few years. Adrian Newey looked super happy.
As he should do.
Clutching his glass of champagne.
Wasn't his first, but it was his first with this team. I believe he's done it with Williams and McLaren in the past.
No, I mean, so that car
is star.
Definitely all Adrian Newey.
Groundbreaking.
Isn't it,
so. Absolutely groundbreaking car. So congratulations to Red Bull.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And Vettel won the race with Webber behind him. Now, if that was Ferrari, you know that Webber would have won.
Yes. Well, see, here's the thing. The question I put to you, and it's a big one. Will Mark Webber be allowed to win the World Drivers' Championship?
Will he be allowed to?
Yeah. I don't think, in my head, I genuinely don't think they will let him win. I think they will do anything. Red Bull Racing will do anything to get Vettel to win. It's Vettel or bust. That's what it is. With Red Bull Racing, it is Vettel to win the WDC or bust. They literally don't care about it, and they don't care about it so little, they would rather Alonso and Ferrari won it than their own Mark Webber. I genuinely believe that. I'm not buying this, we don't do team orders, we're going to do it sportingly. I don't think they are doing it sportingly. I think what they're doing is giving Vettel the best chance possible, and if he can't do it, no one can.
I kind of think, I mean, I do sort of buy into the equality thing, but only in the sense that they're being equal, and therefore they're making Webber lose it.
Mm.
And through that equality,
oh, what a shame.
They don't care. They're not even contemplating it. Because everyone knows that team orders are banned, fine. But if you had to have Vettel and Webber a 1-2, and you want the championship, you're going to make it a 2-1 in this case.
Mm. I mean, you can say that team orders are not banned. They just come with a £100,000 fine.
Yeah.
Which isn't a problem for Dietrich Mateschitz. It's just not a big deal. So if he wanted to swap the drivers, he could do. Also, I'm not sure that the FIA would be too bothered at this point in the season, because it's an issue if you do it in summer when there's all still to play for.
Yeah.
But
that
when
there's only one race left.
Yeah, I mean, would the fans be that miffed if the drivers had been swapped around in Brazil? I don't know if there would have been an outcry. It was almost expected.
Yeah, no, I thought that they were going to do it, and they didn't.
I genuinely hope that if Red Bull care so little about the WDC, that they never get a chance to go for it again. Obviously, they're so confident that Vettel's going to win it next year. They're not that bothered, and they'll take the constructors. In fact, this team is probably worse than Ferrari in the Ferrari-Michael Schumacher days, when they would favour Schumacher over any other driver. It's actually worse because they're willing to lose, whereas Ferrari were always out to win. They just wanted the right driver to win. Red Bull seemed to me, in my head, that only Vettel will do. And, you know, if they can find a way to either make Webber lose it next year or find a way to get shot of him and put someone like Al Suari in the second car, then they will do their utmost to make that happen, because all they want, all they seem to care about, is Sebastian Vettel being a driver's championship. And I'll tell you what, something else has just come to mind, which is another conspiracy theory in my head, which I'm sure you'll love. But if you're
on top form today,
if you think back, cast your mind back to Monza.
I'm going to fail miserably here. Sorry.
Don't ask me which year it was. It might have been 2008, Monza, wet, Vettel on pole. Sebastian Bourdais was second.
In a Toro Rosso?
Yep. Huh. Okay, same team, effectively. Still owned by Mateschitz. Vettel was the lead car, and he was on pole. I said at the time, I believe, that I thought they just turned Bourdais' car off. At the time, it seemed complete lunacy that they switched off the guy in second place and denied their own self the chance of a 1-2 in a race when they were a small team. But actually, in hindsight, the more I learn about Red Bull and the way they treat Sebastian Vettel, I would not be surprised if they didn't happily scupper Bourdais' chance to show Vettel up, because there was always a risk he might do better. And God forbid anybody does better than Vettel. And back then, I thought I was nuts for thinking it. But now, the more I see the way they react, I wouldn't be surprised if they turned off Webber's engine in Abu Dhabi on the grid and just went, oh, the engine failed, you'll have to go to the back of the grid. Because anybody, absolutely anybody, can win this world championship but Webber, and they'll be happy. It's insane. It really is.
It is insane, and I don't believe it then.
Because it's that crazy.
How could they?
They just don't seem to care. Nothing they say, nothing that comes out of Mateschitz's or Marco's or Horner's mouth seems to me to say we actually care about Mark Webber, or we even care about the Drivers' Championship. They've got the constructors. They're happy with that. That'll do. Next year, they'll fight for it for the WDC. And Alonso just... Well, what does Alonso think of this?
Think I will reserve judgment until we see what happens in Abu Dhabi.
Webber won't win it. I'm telling you now. I do not put your money on Mark Webber. They won't let him. They'll find something to go wrong. I promise you.
I think we should move on. I feel like you could talk about Red Bull all day. Feedback. Last week, we had a message from Foxy McFox through the contact form asking what people were going to be doing with their off season and how we were going to entertain everyone. I don't know if you remember that.
I recall it well.
Yes.
Hello, Foxy.
Pat W. actually answered the question via the contact form. He said, hi guys, in the recent debrief you asked what we're doing over the off season. Normally I hate the off season, so I always plan measures against it, so lots of recordings to watch that I've stored up through the year, using them to write lots of blog posts, toomuchracing.com, because I've been a bit rubbish at that until recently. There's also Thursday Thoughts. I'm not promising to participate every week, but I'll do my best, and if any bloggers are listening, they should join in too. Anyway, it isn't long until Christmas, and then straight after that are the car launches and the first pre-season tests. All that said, this year I wouldn't mind a quiet rest for a few weeks, a bit of a holiday, some downtime from thinking about F1 constantly since March. You guys have already done that, so you probably don't feel it. In the shows, you sound all pepped up like this is the beginning of the season. Still, good to have you back in my ears.
It's a good act.
Cheers, my dears. Pat from toomuchracing.com.
Pat, via the contact form.
Yes.
You kept that from me.
I do that. I'm sneaky like that.
Do you think we sound more perky? Are you feeling more perky?
I don't know. Probably.
Are you not looking forward to the end of the season? It's worth mentioning that right now, this time last year, the season would be over.
Yes.
That would have been the last race of the year. We'd be done, but there's one more to go.
I know. And we've been quite busy these last few weeks as
well. Yes. I did say 2 weeks ago, I promise there will be a new Factbox widget. And I knew that because there was only about an hour's worth of work to do. And in the interim 2 weeks, No hour.
You haven't found that hour.
That's just been missing from my life. We've done, there was an extended double length podcast with Joe.
Double Joe.
We talked to Monique.
Yep.
And we've done three debriefs.
Well, this is the third.
It's just been nonstop. We have a stack of guest posts which are queued up, ready to go on the site. It's just been nonstop. So I am still looking forward to the off season.
But you just had a holiday and now you want another one.
I feel slightly bad. The worst thing is that in 2011, we'd have two more races to go.
It's going
to
get worse.
It's going
to. Have you seen that calendar?
It finishes the end of November. We'd have another, two and a bit weeks to go.
Yeah.
And then the off season to Christmas is literally going to be 3 weeks. That's all of your downtime. Imagine doing a season review when you've only got 3 weeks to do it.
Yeah.
There's just not enough time to really take a break and think about it. It's just crazy. It's
because
too compressed.
Does all start again in January with, as Pat said, the launches and.
Yeah.
And the testing and all that.
It's just, and I'm sure in 2012, Bernie will shrink that side of the off season as well, because the calendar will get even longer and it will get even more compressed. It's just mental. How can you be an F1 fan with that many races?
Well, I must say, we had a post on this subject on the blog.
Okay.
Because we don't like the idea of 20 races, and basically we wanted everyone to agree with us that it was a silly idea.
We're good like that.
I'll tell you what, some people thought it was okay.
Right.
James pointed out that at least the back-to-backs are more sensible next year with Malaysia, China, Spain, Monaco, Germany, Hungary, and Japan, Korea.
That's a lot of back-to-backs, Luke.
Well, four.
But better.
But they make more sense. Mm. And Simon the Backpacker said, I hate to disagree with everyone, but for me, 20 races is great. I miss it so much in the off-season, and I'm one of the few people, it seems, that enjoys all races. While obviously some tracks are better than others, I still enjoy myself on the Sundays when everyone else is yawning. Bahrain this year made me realise how much of a geek I am, as while watching, I realised it was boring, yet continued to love every second of it. I have enjoyed every race this year and look forward to every race next year, as long as everyone involved in the sport and reporting the sport gets enough of a break, so 20 should be the absolute limit. I'm all for it, and bring on HD.
Well, that's true. HD was good. It was upscaled. I saw a small section of upscaled HD, thanks to my mum, who recorded some of it for us.
Yes, BBC One HD channel launched, and they featured Formula One
upscaled.
But upscaled, because we don't have proper F1 HD.
So proper F1 HD will be good. I'm thinking in my head that next year we need to find a way to break away from the 20 races and do side podcast regardless of the races, so then therefore it doesn't become a big issue. I don't know how we can do that, but to me it's too many. But I'm glad that Simon is optimistic and looking forward to it.
Stephen, who we heard from earlier in the voicemail, he is on our side though. He said, for years we had a 15-16 race calendar and no one ever suggested it was too short or too long, so I conclude the ideal number of races is 15 or 16.
I would agree with that. Which was basically what it was when we started Side Podcast. It was about 17 races, I think, when the very first year we did this.
I just know that it's creeping up and up and up. And that at some point, it's going to be every single week.
My concern, I think, isn't the fact that it's more. It's the fact that the off-season is too small.
Yes.
That's the biggie. It's because, I mean, your advent calendar, which I think you're going to do this year again.
Well, I was thinking about it, but now I've just realised that, you know, there's not much time left.
Well, you can do this year, you can do December the 1st to December the 25th.
Yeah.
But next year,
that's going to be difficult.
That's going to be pretty much the day the race ends, you start your season review.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel right.
Anyway, let us move on. Foxy McFox, who asked the off-season question in the first place, who, as it turns out, is the Matt Fox that wrote the On Track With post that I trailed last time.
Yes, our new guest writer.
Yeah, he was the 49th guest
Fantastic
writer.
Fantastic effort.
And we haven't had the 50th yet. So
is it still open?
Watch this space.
Awesome.
He also left another message in the contact form and said, although I suggested a request for those unlucky enough not to have an inner with the F1 glitterati, i.e. not your good selves, I don't know that we do. But he said to share their plans for the off-season. I didn't actually say what I was going to do. How remiss. Well, like most F1 fans with a games console, I will most likely be furthering my F1 2010 career as much as I can. This game is really special, and using a Logitech wheel just makes it so much better. Unfortunately, this means I probably will have a massive vitamin D deficiency when the season starts again. But any fan won't mind being a bit pasty for their hobby.
I have that. I every year, I go through a whole year with a big vitamin D deficiency.
Yeah.
And it's not from
sunlight.
Playing
games. What's that?
I don't know what sunlight is. I don't need sunlight. It's fine. You can live without it, honest. Play more games. That's fantastic. That sounds like a great idea. And
people do love that game.
I've heard good things about the game since it's been patched.
Yes.
So it was released with more bugs.
People also hate that game.
Yes. Initially, it was released with more bugs than the average Microsoft piece of software. However, they've nailed it. They've sorted it. And it sounds like it's much improved. And maybe we'll find a way of... we need to find somebody with a copy who will let us in on Christmas
Day. I'm happy not to.
You're happy not to play it?
Yeah.
You were rubbish.
I am rubbish.
At the last... Which, what was the last one? The
2009?
Wii game.
2009?
The Wii game.
Yeah.
Not good.
Housekeeping.
This week, we had our not very regular side podcast business meeting.
Right.
Which basically means we go out for dinner and chat about side podcast.
Yes.
And basically...
What did you decide?
Well, I only wanted to bring it up just to say that we do have plans to keep the site up.
Yes.
Now. So
yes.
Rest assured, people.
How far ahead have we planned?
About January.
No, I think we went as far as the start of the season, didn't we?
Yes.
We know what we're doing up until the start of the season. And are you excited about it? Because that's important.
Yes.
How was your food?
Yeah, the food was lovely.
I think in order to plan beyond the start of next season, we need more business meetings.
More food.
Something like that, yeah.
This week also you had to write one of the daily posts.
Super sub.
You were a super sub. And you casually mentioned that something had cost us a little bit of money.
I didn't tell you.
No.
I deliberately.
I find things out on the site just as everyone else does.
Intentionally forgot to mention it to you because I knew you would kill me.
Yeah. So is it because we've done a lot more podcasts, so it's cost us a bit more money, would expect?
Since we sort of half upshifted, we've released more podcasts, which use more bandwidth, and we went over our limits. There are various limits, and in the past
we broke them.
Yeah, we broke them. We've done that before on occasion.
We just weren't expecting it.
I got out of the habit of you can avoid these charges by shuffling files around a lot and generally doing lots of sort of dull administrative stuff. And because we'd been away all summer, I'd literally forgotten all about it. And then the bill came for October.
Yeah.
And I think November's probably going to be quite excessive too, because we're doing more podcasts and there's more things coming according to our business plans.
Yes. But the good news is that loads of lovely people donated money to us.
It was very kind of them.
Yes. Superb donations from Alison, Amy, Giggles, Bassano, Gavin, Kathy, Eric, James, Kai, Pamela, and Turkey Machine.
Many things.
All donated money. And also John donated a little bit before that, but I think it was unrelated to your call to arms.
I do also think it wasn't a call to arms, really. Honestly, that was not what I was expecting at all. I mostly dropped it in there because I planned to shock you.
It was your way of telling me without having to face me, wasn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. I couldn't quite bring up the fact that I'd messed up and I'd cost you £150.
Yeah.
So I personally just used it as a really sneaky way to drop it into conversation where you couldn't kill me because it was public. And if I died that day, it would be quite suspicious.
People would know.
I should also mention that Amy said that the money she donated was not for me and I was to keep my grubby hands off it, and she donated it purely for you because you're lovely and not for me, who's an idiot. So that should be noted too. But thank you very much to everybody who donated. It makes a big difference, I think. Firstly, we should thank everybody who stayed subscribed to Side Podcast, because the only reason we went over these limits is because people didn't abandon us.
And that's amazing. I had a tweet this week that said, "Why are you watching F1? I thought you had gone away on hiatus." And I'm thinking, yeah, we did. But now we're back.
Yes. Woo-hoo. We're not back up. We're not full speed.
The thing about a hiatus is that you usually come back, isn't it?
Mm. I guess that's, yeah. Quitting is different. Mm. And I would say we're still not working anywhere near as hard as we did prior to downshifting. And again, as I think I said before, it hasn't been the best year, even with this close championship fight. But thank you to everybody who donated. It gives us a lot of inspiration and momentum.
The last thing I wanted to mention is that next week is your final opportunity to join us for the Fact Bite Fact Box for a race weekend.
Mm, we've run out of races.
The Fact Bite Fact Box will be around during the off season. I will likely be hijacking it for things like the Race of Champions, maybe.
Looking forward to that.
Maybe the BBC Sports Personality of the Year.
Really?
Maybe even Children in Need. Who knows?
Goodness me. You're getting a bit carried away with this Fact Bite Fact Boxing. Are you enjoying it?
I must say it is quite addictive. And I may be obsessed with it. And in my head all the time, I'm thinking, oh, I could fact bite fact box that.
Yes.
Yeah. And for some reason, when there's sessions happening that I'm not doing, like, for instance, free practice, I couldn't do that this week. I was still looking at Twitter and posting things in the comments as if I was doing the Fat Bike Fat Box thing.
A virtual Fat Bike Fat Box. Yeah. I'm glad that you enjoy it. I think it's a perfect little system for side podcasts because it works well with what I do and what you do. And there was a great example, I think, this week when you were transcribing a press conference either on Saturday or Sunday, and just this amazing stream of text was appearing on screen. I could hear you tapping and typing away. And never in anything we've ever done has your typing skills really been needed. I mean, when do you ever need to type super fast doing a podcast? And I know you can type fast from transcribing other things we've done, but this really gives you an outlet and a vehicle to show that off. I mean, if you look through the Fat Bike Fat Box for this weekend, there was several paragraphs of quotes, 1 minute and 2 minutes apart. And I know that those times are absolutely accurate. And I heard you type every single word and I was just listening stunned at how much you were typing. So it's a great new thing that we're doing. And I like that it can show off another side of side podcasts that we've never really had a use for in the past.
And I must say, it's the most fun I think I've ever had working that hard because it's not easy.
No.
And at the end of it, we're like, whew.
That's why we didn't do a podcast yesterday.
Yeah. But it is enormous amounts of fun and I just want to do it all the time.
So there will be more Fact Bite Fact Boxing in 2011. That's a plan, by the way. That's a commitment.
We can't do that. We need to go out to dinner first.
Time for lunch.